Hi, welcome to episode 7 of Stumbled Upon Theater. This is our 2020 holiday special, even though it's coming out in 2021 and the holidays are definitely over. Due to some audio issues, it took a while to get out, and apologies for any audio issues that still remain in the episode. But to make up for it, you get to hear my cat Basil in the background at some points during the episode, so watch out for those. This time around, my friends Emma, Henry, and I discussed two wild parties from the 1990s, The Wild Party by Andrew Lippa and The Wild Party by Michael John Lacusa. Also, just a content warning for parts of this episode, there are mentions of domestic abuse and brief mentions of sexual assault. With all that being said, thank you so much for listening and enjoy the podcast. Jiggity jig, hee ha, hee ha. It's
that
Henry
fucking
the
Christmas
donkey.
Song. Why? Who wrote that?
Don't, Emma, don't hate. Do not
Dominic?
Hate. Don't you,
you
fucking hate.
You like Dominic?
Don't you fucking hate. I'm Dominic the Donkey.
That's so
yes.
Awful.
I love Dominic the Donkey.
No, okay, you know what bothers me the most about that song? It's the lyric where they say,
jiggity,
the Italian Christmas donkey. They have to specify that he's a Christmas donkey. To make
what
song work.
What else would he be?
Specify
I mean,
that he's
it,
a Christmas donkey.
It does work, though.
Well, I guess, but that's so
surface.
He's
the Italian
Christmas donkey. That's who he is.
I want to know more about
jiggity
him.
Jig.
Are you expecting a donkey
yes!
to be nuanced? Are you kidding me? Like,
it's special.
Speaking of Dominic the Donkey, I this semester... at the University of the Arts, I took a storytelling class as part for my liberal arts credit. The final assignment, which is just, you know, create any kind of story you wanted. And so I wrote a story, a Rudolph-like story about Dominic the Donkey, because I was like, wait a minute, they don't actually tell the story of Dominic the Donkey in the song. So what if I just write the story? And so basically what I'm trying to say is I wrote Dominic the Donkey fan fiction. And I got a perfect score on it, so.
For those of you who weren't me, Emma, and Henry, for the past hour and 10 minutes, we've been trying to set up a connection to have a recorded phone call. Listeners at home, welcome to hell.
Welcome to the Thunderdome.
For those of you who don't know Henry used to watch a lot of professional wrestling, which is why
he did. I didn't know that.
First of all, that's not even a professional wrestling reference. Second of all,
wait, what is Thunderdome? Monster trucks?
It's a Mad Max reference.
Oh,
I'm pretty
okay.
Sure. I'm pretty sure.
I thought it was like a Dwayne.
Oh, I haven't seen
Dwayne the
movie.
Rock Johnson.
Oh, well.
A Dwayne. It was a Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Dwayne.
The Dwayne reference.
A Dwayne.
Oh, hold on. I'm gonna look. Let me.
Are you looking up the reference?
I am.
Okay.
If Dwayne the
yes,
Rock Johnson was an actual rock, what kind of rock do you think he would be?
Probably an igneous or whatever.
What? Do you know? Are you a geologist?
Yes. Okay, Thunderdome is an arena for steel cage jousting in the 1985 Australian post-apocalyptic film Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Beyond Thunderdome.
But doesn't it sound like it could easily be something having to do with pro wrestling or...
Oh, of course.
Whatever it was I said.
Okay. Well, and
Monster
in the musical
trucks.
Heathers, she says, welcome to my school. This ain't no high school. This is
the Thunderdome. Yeah. Yes.
Hold your breath. Count the days.
You're right.
White trash. Anyways. Hi, I miss you guys.
I miss you both so much.
Not as much as I miss Amber,
yeah.
Evidently.
Well,
evidently.
Great.
Apparently.
Thanks,
Amber.
Meg.
Like,
yeah,
I haven't seen Amber since last summer.
Yeah, Amber.
That's fair.
Amber, yeah. If you're listening, fuck you. Okay, here we go.
No! Amber, I miss you more than Meg does.
I think it was Victoria who counted how many times I said, Amber, I miss you, in the first, like, 3 minutes, and it was, like, 12 times.
Well, it was apt that you named the episode that.
Yes.
Yeah.
God,
I wonder what
people knew what they were getting in for with that episode.
Yeah. Emma, you recently graduated from this little liberal arts college in New York City called NYU.
Yes, I did.
Folks at home, if you've heard about it, good for you. And Emma, at one point during your college career,
yes,
you did the show The Wild Party.
I did.
You did. And
a year ago, almost.
And Henry, your school also did The Wild Party recently.
This Wild Party production was written by Michael John Lacusa.
Okay, so that's how you pronounce
yes,
it? Because I've been saying Lachuiza.
Not at all.
Shut the
is.
Fuck up. No.
Wow, Emma fully takes advantage of the
I will
Emma,
defend.
It sounds like you're about to punch me.
I will defend Lacusa. I love that man. I love his
will
music.
You?
Lachuiza?
Yes.
Whoa.
Well, honestly, I'm more familiar with music from his other shows, from his other musicals that he's written. But of what I know of his music, I think it's really cool and fascinating.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, so this is, you know, I'm conflicted on this debate that Henry and I might have over these two versions of this musical, because I don't know.
I'm not essentially here to debate, but
what? What'd you say? You don't want
to
fight
to
me,
fight.
Henry? You
no,
don't
I,
want
I,
to fight
I didn't come here to fight. I came to learn. Let me just push up my glasses real quick.
I'm gonna do less talking and more listening. I'm gonna just
see you say that, but it sounds like you're about to fight.
I think Henry's always ready to fight me.
Rolling up.
Little Gemini.
Shut up, okay?
Yes, this is a Gemini, a Taurus.
And a Virgo walk into a bar
to have a conversation.
Yeah.
Have the three of us ever been to a bar together?
No.
I don't think that's...
Wait, yes. No, we have. Union Underground.
Oh my gosh.
Really count.
Gosh.
Well, I guess it does.
Put an F in the chat if you understand the reference. Only real
if
ones
you,
don't
if
go
you
Union
miss
Underground.
The Union Underground.
If you remember the day that they wouldn't let Henry in.
Wait, what do you mean? Oh, no.
There was one night they wouldn't let you in.
Because you are underage, sir.
Yeah, well, go figure.
You were but a wee lad. Have either of you stumbled upon anything recently that, like, I don't know, made you cry? Or made you laugh? Or made you miss me?
Theater in particular? or anything?
Maybe.
Anything?
Honestly, anything. Anything that elicited some form of emotion besides contempt for your fellow man.
Oh, I watched Lady Bird last night. which
What is that?
Oh my god, you need to watch it immediately.
Wait, did you say what?
Lady Bird by...
It's oh, Sarah Lady Sharon. Bird. I thought you said labor? As in,
no.
As in work? And I was like, is it like the musical Working?
No. Oh, I hate that.
Henry watched a woman give...
Oh, well, yeah, that's another way to...
Sometimes I just watch YouTube videos of people going into labor just to like...
Yeah, just to feel something.
Just to de-stress. Myself. That's my just ASMR.
I saw Lady Bird last night and that fucking blew me away.
Oh, yeah. I need to watch it again. I haven't seen movie. It in a long time.
Anyway, yeah, that's my stumbled upon.
I didn't come prepared with an answer, Meg. I came prepared with my research on The Wild Party.
Emma stumbled and fell on her face. That's what
sure. Yeah. I like that. Thank you. Thank you, Henry, for that more clever
You're
answer.
You're welcome.
I wow. stumbled into depression.
Same.
That's, yeah. So Meg.
Yeah. It's okay. Everyone's a little depressed. Yeah. I think anyone who says that they're happy.
I definitely feel like Charlie Brown at Christmas, this Christmas.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like that Avenue Q song. Everyone's a little bit.
Everyone's a little bit depressed.
Depressed.
The universe.
Yeah.
The universe keeps sending me signs that I have ADHD.
Yo, ADHD
please,
gang. Yo,
please elaborate.
Yo,
yo, press one in the chat if you have ADHD.
Oh God. I went to the bathroom today at work. In my own room.
Uh-huh.
And I
sat down.
And the person next to me must have like pee anxiety because she starts playing K-pop.
Like, really my God.
To cover the sound of her peeing.
Nothing gets me going. Like,
let it flow.
I've never peed so quickly in my life. I was like, I need to get out of here because either she's dropping a big one or I'm going to get murdered.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Yeah.
Do you know what I just remembered? That book that we found in Walmart, I think, that was called like Walking with Henry. And like, yes, it was like Henry donkey? Was a cow.
Yo.
Or something. It was a donkey.
Oh my God.
And this like little blonde Austrian farm boy was like, walking with you.
Yeah, it was.
Oh my God!
And it was a Christian book, I believe. It was like really religious.
Yes. Yeah, this woman like found God.
Oh,
was it like connected to like the donkey at the Christmas manger or something?
Yeah. No, dude, I was there when Jesus was born.
Oh, like, damn! Congratulations.
Welcome everybody to our Christmas party.
Welcome to my party.
That's what she sounds like.
Who
the hell invited you?
Our wild Christmas party. The year was, what year was it, guys?
When 1999.
One
yeah.
Two.
Yeah.
1999.
The year I was born.
In 1999, Henry was born. Princess Diana had been dead for 2 years. I was one.
Negative 2 years old.
Emma was 1 year old. And this year brought Broadway two shows the same name from the same source.
Only one made it to Broadway.
Well, folks, I think this is where we learn another new thing about our Christmas special is this time, folks, Meg doesn't
this
know
time.
What the fuck is going on.
This time it's the guests who came prepared. How the turntables.
Yes. Only one of them made it to Broadway. The Lacusa version made it to Broadway. And the Lipa one was only off Broadway.
Whoa.
And both of them did not do well. Like, both of them were pretty much flops. Like, the Lacusa version played like 58 performances.
Oh, God.
And the Lipa one had like 47, I think.
Yeah.
It closed the Wild Party. Lacusa Wild Party closed on my first
birthday. Seriously? Yeah, I was looking up some articles earlier about the history of the two shows and that compare and contrast the two. Because I was just in preparation for this podcast, but also because I'm just a musical theater nerd and I was genuinely interested.
But so actually, I've done zero research on the Lipa version. I've done zero. I have no idea if the characters are the same or not.
Well, that's what I'm here for, buddy.
Okay, so I'm just gonna go through the character list because.
Oh, okay.
Just for that.
Break it down.
Yeah. So if you will learn anything, the viewers at home, if y'all take anything away from this podcast, which I doubt you will, but if you do, just remember that Queenie was a blonde, because that gets stated a lot in this.
Queenie was a blonde.
If I could interject, between the two shows, they both start with the same lyric of Ooh. Queenie was a blonde and her age stood still and she danced twice a day in vaudeville. Both of the musicals start with that lyric, but then after that, they're wildly different.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So we have Queenie, who is in fact a blonde, or was a blonde. Who knows? And she's like one of the main characters. And then she is. Okay. So I'm just going to read it from the Wikipedia article. The guests include fading star Dolores, Kate, Queenie's best friend and rival, Black, Kate's younger lover, who has his eye on Queenie, Jackie, a rich, quote, ambisexterous, unquote, kid, who had his eye on everyone, regardless of gender or age. We will get to that. Oscar and Phil, a gay couple slash brother act, lesbian stripper Miss Madeline True, and her Miss Madeline True and her morphine addicted girlfriend Sally.
Yeah.
Black prize fighter Eddie and his wife May, and then May's underage Lolita like sister Nadine. And then at the hosts of the party are Queenie and Burrs, whose relationship is awful. Oh, and there's also Gold and Goldman, I believe their names are, which are two Jewish producers, would-be producers.
I think their names are Goldman and Goldberg.
Something like that, yeah.
So my question is, the people who are brothers and lovers?
Yes.
So are they...
To answer the question, no, they don't necessarily... they don't necessarily parade the fact that they are lovers as well. It's more of a brother act than it is a sex act.
Yeah, that's fair.
Gotcha.
Because they're performers, and so you know the brother act is very popular, especially back then. Yeah, but it leads to some awkward things. So let's just go down the synopsis, shall we?
Yes.
Okay. So this play is quirky in that
she's not like other plays.
She's quirky in that there are no real scenes, unlike a lot of musical theater. In fact, it's kind of sketches almost, where each little section of the show has its own title. So it's kind of like Love and Information and by Carol Churchill in that way.
Carol Churchill reference?
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Ooh, snaps.
Anyway.
F in the chat.
If you love Carol Churchill.
Carol Churchill. So it starts out with the Vaudeville is the title, which is every musical starts with a company number. This is a company number recounting the story of Queenie, a blonde who works as a showgirl in the Vaudeville, who is attracted to, quote, violent and vicious men, much like Burrs. She is currently living with a man named Burrs, who works with her in the same Vaudeville as an act after her. His act is a minstrel show where he performs in blackface. I don't know the full details of this because I'm never in the know, but the UArts production of the Wild Party was very controversial within the school. Because it was not handled particularly well with the themes of this show, and keeping the cast particularly giving the cast a safe space to explore these themes. This was one of these bad things where blackface wasn't literally done, but it's still very uncomfortable.
I'll
note that is a detail that is not in the Lipa musical.
That would not surprise me. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. So one Sunday, Queenie wakes up restless, and she and Burrs soon come to blows. Because what's funnier than domestic abuse? To try to put less strain on their relationship, and to convince her to put a knife down. So Queenie has a knife right now.
Mm-hmm.
And to put less strain in the relationship. This is more tense. Burrs suggests that they throw a huge party, a wild party, and invite all the old
Wait. This is important. So in the Lacusa version, are you saying that in this version, the party is Burrs' idea?
Yes,
it is. In the Lip version, it's Queenie's idea.
Ooh.
And she sings a song called Out of the Blue, where she basically talks about, I think she has those same reasons for wanting to throw the party, but I think her main reason is that she wants Burrs to see like how valuable and important she is, and that she can have other men. And I think she also wants to meet other men to be with instead of Burrs. Anyway, that's just that's an interesting difference.
Song they sing in this was Wild Party, not Out of the Blue.
Yeah.
The songs actually, I'll say this now. All the songs are obviously different between the two versions. Mm-hmm. And while, as Emma mentioned before, the Lipa version is much more modern and, you know, catchy musical theater, the Lacusa version is much more accurate to the time period.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very 20s, it's very vaudeville, that classic feel. So that's a big difference between the two versions. Okay, anyway, we go into the next sketch titled Promenade of Guests.
Promenade!
Shout out Promenade. Woo-hoo! Another musical. Anyway, all the guests soon arrive and exchange words with Burrs, and the alcohol starts flowing. Queenie makes her appearance in a new dress and welcomes everyone. Nadine, May's friend, a miner who wants to be a blonde and drink bathtub gin. Madeline, a almost famous stripper, almost famous is in quotes, introduces Queenie to her new girlfriend, the catatonic morphine addicted Sally, who she met crawling outside the theater in a drug stupor.
So that character's track is completely different in the Lipa version. Sally is not in the Lipa one. The girlfriend.
Whoa.
No. Yeah. But also, Sally in this version does not only says one line.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And we'll get to what that line is later. Madeline tells Queenie of their love and of Sally's genius. Next up is Jackie, the ambisexterous rich kid with his eye on anybody and everybody.
Yikes.
The incestually devoted Darmano brothers, Oscar and Phil, sing a new ditty as Gold and Goldberg, two would-be producers arrive. They are planning to move uptown, and Burrs is convinced that they want to take him. He joins with the brothers to impress them in the show, in the number called Uptown, which is actually very catchy, anyway.
And actually, in the original Broadway production, was performed by one of my teachers from NYU.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. Queenie wonders where her friend Kate is, and Burrs expresses his dislike for her. Eddie, a successful black boxer, and his white wife, May, talk of their marriage in the number Eddie and May. Dolores, a faded star, hints to Burrs that she knows his secrets and forces him to introduce her to Gold and Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
The producers are fighting over their name. So Gold wants to change their Goldberg's name to Golden to hide their Jewish heritage. This is also a theme. They want to change their names to become successful with the song Golden Goldberg. Burrs introduces them to Dolores, who begins to seduce them with her feminine wiles.
Yep.
The party, titled The Party. Queenie starts a dance to raise the energy, but Kate soon interrupts with her arrival. She has come with Mr. Black, an attractive gigolo. Queenie and Kate trade. Yeah.
He's specified as a gigolo in this version?
I don't believe.
What's a gigolo?
It's a male prostitute.
Meg.
Oh.
Oh my God.
I was thinking juggalo.
You sweet summer child.
Also,
no, like the clown.
The
clown.
No.
Queenie and Kate trade insults and love, telling the dean of their double-edged friendship. Burrs and Kate do not get along, with Kate disapproving of Queenie's romantic entanglement with him, while Queenie and Black begin to feel an attraction to each other. Meanwhile, Jackie tries to separate the D'Armano brothers, flirting with Oscar. Dolores hints to Queenie's troubles. Dolores hints to Queenie about troubles in Burr's past, while Nadine sings a I do not know this word. P-A-E-A-N.
P-A-E-A-N?
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm glad I'm not the only one who doesn't know that word. Anyway, she sings she sings that to Broadway, only to be cut off by Queenie. Queenie and Black meet up and find their attraction growing stronger. Queenie asks him to show her how he picks up the ladies, and his hypothetical soon turns into a real proposition, and he pulls her up to dance. Kate and Burrs notice how close Queenie and Black are becoming, and Burrs wonders about the demise of fidelity. Queenie tells Black of her troubled existence, wondering why she was born, as Burrs hypes up the party with gin. The party quickly escalates, with everybody drinking, dancing, and arguing. Dolores warns Queenie of Burrs' first wife, who he beat to death, and Queenie escapes to the bathroom. There, she is confronted by Burrs of her entanglement with Black, and he begins to assault her. Kate barges in and saves Queenie, and Burrs furiously rejoins the party with a coked-up Jackie. Kate and Queenie argue about her relationship with Burrs, as Jackie and Oscar are found having sex in the bathroom. It's smoky. Oscar and Phil argue publicly, while May and Eddie exchange heated words. Kate warns Queenie that Burrs will kill her, and when Queenie refuses to listen, Kate jumps back into the party. Eddie and May soon come to blows, hitting each other, as Dolores seduces Gold and Goldberg, bringing them into the bedroom. Distraught with the state of the party, Queenie is dragged out by Black as the party continues in full swing. Madeline searches for Sally and asks her to say her name. The guests all gather and culminate in an orgy as Burrs and asks Kate about
Black. Culminate in an orgy!
What do you know? Kate reveals that she knows that Black is using her, but she is fine with it. Outside, Queenie and Black bond at the fact that they are different from the rest, wondering where they belong and what will become of them. They're not like other girls.
So let me throw in a few differences at the end of this section of the show. In the Lipa version, May and Eddie don't start fighting. There isn't a disagreement between them, which I think that's really interesting. And I'm glad that happens in this version. And what else?
You're glad they punched each other?
Well, it's more interesting that there's conflict between them, I guess. An orgy does happen in the Lipa version, but it's, I think, considerably tamer in the way that they depict it in the show.
Oh, yeah.
The thing with, that hasn't happened yet. The relationship between Jackie and Phil and Oscar is not a thing. They're just like buddies at the party in the Lipa version. There's no
they're just guys they're just being
guys
dudes.
Being bros. And and what else like I said before, Sally does not exist.
Two bros
in the Lipa version. Gold and Goldberg are not characters in the Lipa version. So honestly, overall, it just feels like, to me, it feels like the Lacusa version is much more fleshed out in terms of the relationships between the characters. Just feel like the Lipa version is a lot more of focusing on the main four, which is Queenie, Burrs, Kate, and Black, and like delving into their emotional, mental states. As opposed to talking more about, like, as opposed to creating as much conflict as possible between all of the characters, which is a lot more interesting.
Yeah, because all the Lipa version really does is focus on the love triangle.
Most of all, yeah.
Yeah, of Queenie, Black, and Birds. But yeah, this version definitely, every character has like a distinct relationship to at least one person also at the party.
Which is how it should which just be. Creates, I mean...
Yeah, 100%. And it totally creates, when all of them are on stage, it totally creates this, like, it's almost overwhelming seeing all of these characters, each of them having different relationships with each other. And it's like, well, so and crazy.
It's funny too, because I remember when I read the script of the Lacusa version after having done the Lipa version, it was really interesting how you're saying how there's, you know, all these connections between the characters that are established in the script. You know, when things like that aren't established, it's your job as an actor to create them for yourself anyway. Like, you know, create a connection between you and everyone on the stage just to make it more interesting and more, you know, more fleshed out.
Yeah.
But it's like, I remember reading the Lacusa script and being like, oh yeah, the choices that we ourselves as a cast made just in our heads that weren't specified by the script are actually specified in this script. And basically a lot of the choices that we had made were the same choices that they that they actually are canon in the Lacusa version.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Y'all were just, y'all were just that
in tune with your
characters.
We just knew. We knew what was going on. But anyway.
Here we go. The next section, After Midnight Dies. Sally, naked, carrying her clothes, reveals she can see clearly now what she and everyone else is. Oh, actually, so Sally does have a number instead of just one line. Okay, cool. She finds Eddie recounting how it feels to beat someone acclaimed but still detested in his number. Oh yeah, I should mention, in at least the UArts production, but I believe in all productions as well, that when it says come to blows, like May like slaps Eddie first, but then like Eddie straight up punches
May.
Oh
wow.
And it creates like this huge tension. It's this huge moment in the show.
Because in the Lipa version, like, Burrs and Eddie get into a fight. Because Eddie mistakes, or no, not Eddie. Burrs mistakes May for Queenie. And he like comes behind her and like starts feeling her up, basically. And then Eddie sees it and he's like, "Why are you touching my wife?" And he punches Burrs in the face. And then a fight breaks out between the two of them.
Ooh.
Sally notices Oscar and Phil making up and turns to find Gold and Goldberg, pants nowhere to be found, wondering what has happened to them. Dolores appears and warns them that their promise must be kept, or terrible things will occur. She then sneaks into the bedroom, where Nadine has just done her first line of coke with Jackie. At Nadine's request for more, Jackie laments how he can never get enough of anything, culminating in rape.
Which does not happen in the Lipa version.
Which, another point of controversy within the show.
The song is so creepy. The song that Jackie sings, oh my god.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Yeah, but
yeah.
Oh boy, it's a lot
to deal with. May hears Nadine's muffled screams, and Eddie charges in and beats Jackie. Eddie goes wild, threatening everyone as Queenie and Black arrive. When Eddie charges at Queenie, Black hits him. Queenie questions Nadine on what had happened with Jackie, but she refuses to call him out, instead saying that she was scared and screamed. Jackie tries to start the party up again and takes out more cocaine. Seeing the coke, Sally goes to him, leaving Madeline. Madeline chases after her, but is stopped when Sally asks, "Who's Sally?"
Ooh.
Spooky. Okay. Anyway, the guests are all told to leave by Burrs as they disappear into the background. Kate confronts Black, telling him that Queenie will choose Burrs and that he will have nowhere to go. Burrs and Queenie come to blows again as she reveals she knows about his wife, the first wife.
Yes.
Queenie refuses to let Burrs make up her mind and leaves with Black. Burrs wonders how many other women could make him feel the way she does before concluding that it is just her.
Wait. Say that line again. Well,
Burrs wonders how many other women could make him feel the way Queenie does before concluding it is just her. Monogamy, ladies and gentlemen.
Interesting.
Gold and Goldberg tell him they had no intention of taking him uptown with them, and he begins to put on his blackface.
It says his vaudeville makeup, but yeah.
Dolores recounts how she used to love the dark, but now she loves the cold, hard light that spares no one. She enjoys knowing who has the stuff and who doesn't to survive. Finale. Queenie and Black lie in bed as Queenie wonders what it is like to live in light and love. Burrs, done up in blackface, mimics the guests before entering the room. He pulls out a gun and threatens to kill Queenie. Black fights back, and Burrs is shot dead and falls on the bed. Kate rushes in and hurries Black to safety. The company does opening vaudeville, trying to lure Queenie into its revelry. Queenie tries, but soon begin to take off her makeup, the company dropping the vaudeville and joining her. Queenie is bathed in the morning light. Scared, unsure, but hopeful, she smiles.
Okay, that's different. So, that's a different ending.
Yeah, so it's kind of a happy ending where Burrs dies and Black just goes off with Kate, I guess. And Queenie is just... Although there isn't much, like, at least at first glance, like, there doesn't seem to be much development for Queenie that much.
Yeah, like, I mean, and if it is, I feel like we would have to read, you know, the lyrics that she sings. And if I remember this correctly, Black just, like, leaves by himself. Like, Kate doesn't come get him or help him. He just, like, goes out through the window. I'm pretty sure that initially Burrs is threatening to kill Black, and then he threatens to kill Queenie. And he's kind of, like, going back and forth, threatening to kill both of them, basically. And then at the end, with the that's really interesting about her, like, taking off her mask of the makeup and the morning light idea, because at least in our staging of it, it was like she was consumed by the revelry of the company. She was buried underneath like these clawing arms and hands. And it was really cool. And that's interesting. I want to, like, look into the endings more, because I don't remember the song at the end of the Lacusa one.
Gotcha.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well done, Henry.
That's it. That's
well done.
The Wild Party,
the Broadway version.
So, I mean, as I said in general at the beginning, and as you could see by the examples of differences that I gave, this show is much darker and more intense than the Lipa version, which I think that the Lipa version is the one that is performed more often, and I think that's why.
Yes.
And because the music is catchier and it's easier and more accessible, which is fair, I guess.
But Lipa did come to a show in Dorset.
Did I tell you that he came to visit our cast?
I think you did.
He came to one of our rehearsals and talked to us about, like, him writing the show and the creation of it and the original production, and like, he watched a few scenes of our run and talked to us about it. It was really cool.
Did you talk to him at all about, like, the Lacusa version at all? Like,
no, I don't think anybody brought that up.
That's fair. I mean, I get why, but
I would have been scared too.
I get why, but I think I don't know. I would have loved to see their reactions between each other's work.
Well, it's very interesting because, you know, they're around the same age.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, come on. You're there's no way that they didn't see each other's production.
Oh, there's no way. If somebody did, I would absolutely go see the competing version.
No, that's what I mean. There's no way they didn't go see.
So were they collaborating on one? And then
they both completely independently, so here's the deal is that the poem, that's the original so source material that these musicals are based on, it's this poem from 1928, I think, by Joseph Moncure March, called The Wild Party.
Ooh.
And it was incredibly racy and scandalous at the time. Like, he had a lot of trouble getting it published, even in the roaring 20s.
Scandal.
But basically, you know, it had kind of fallen out of the public eye or public knowledge because it was back in the 20s. But then in, I think, 1994, this artist named Art Spiegelman, he created illustrations to accompany the poem and published a new version of the poem with his illustrations added.
I love Art Spiegelman. Very cool. Oh my God.
And so that, like, and I think that publication was very successful. So it got the poem back into the public eye. So then these two composers both independently read this poem and were like, this would make a great musical, and just started developing their own musicals. And it just so happened that they came up in the same. And it's funny because if the Lipa version had also made it to Broadway, they probably would have been in the same Broadway season. So they would have been up for, like,
I mean, they were in the same
season. I guess so.
They were in the same, like, they were going up at the same time. Yeah. It's just,
but it could have been like Lacusa's it could have been like Broadway. The award for best musical, two musicals
between The Wild Party
with the same source material.
Going into cast members, something wild I just found out, or while researching, the original Queenie was Toni Collette.
Yes.
Which is fucking wild.
I didn't even know she was a singer.
Me neither. It's like, what a
queen. Well, and the original
Queenie.
The original Lipa cast was pretty stacked. I mean, it had Idina Menzel, Taye Diggs, Brian D'Arcy James, and then Julia Murney was
the
Queenie.
Gainesville here.
I don't know her as well, but yeah.
Yeah, we had
Mandy Patinkin, who is, I fucking love Mandy Patinkin.
Yeah, Mandy Patinkin played Burrs, and then Eartha Kitt played Dolores,
which is so cool.
Which is wild.
Cool. Well, and I read something about the Lacusa version that he initially wanted Vanessa Williams to play Queenie in the production.
Yes, right.
Like, he wanted Queenie to be a black woman, which is very interesting.
Yes.
But then that didn't come to pass.
She had a baby, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it says it. Yes, she was replaced by Toni Collette when she became pregnant.
Which that's totally interesting. It adds another layer, you know, of Burrs being a blackface and then having a.
I read this like blog post that someone did about a production of Lacusa's Wild Party that they saw in Canada a few years ago in Toronto. And in their casting of it, both Queenie and Burrs were played by black actors. And so they talked about in the review that it was a very interesting thing to see how they dealt with Burrs being played by a black actor and the element of Burrs wearing blackface in the show, which is something that really happened back in the days of vaudeville. You know, even black performers wore blackface to accentuate, you know, making black people into caricatures. And so it's really interesting.
It's crazy. So Also to note, the Lacusa version got nominated for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Tonys.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, including Best Musical, Best Book, Best Original Score, and then Mandy Patinkin, Toni Collette, and Eartha Kitt all got nominations for their performances in their assigned categories. And then the lighting design also got nominated. Which go off.
Did they? And they had a London production, apparently.
They did too. Yeah. Also, yeah, but it won none of the Tonys. It got nominated for all of them, but 1-0.
Damn. Does Mandy Patinkin have a Tony? I'm looking.
Oh no, he totally does. He does. He has one for.
I always forget he was in Evita. Ooh. He should have won for Sunday in the Park. Come on.
But what is your favorite difference between the two musicals?
I really want to see the Lipa version now.
I
really
feel the same way. I want to see the Lacusa version.
You know, it would be nice to see this show without so much domestic abuse and sexual assault and that.
Yes.
I think the story, like when you just us talking about it, I think the story and the book of the Lacusa version I prefer because I like the dynamic of having that kind of ensemble.
I agree.
Versus four main people. I just, you know, wish the adult themes. I mean, and that could just be my bias because UArts didn't really handle those themes very appropriately.
In response to that, I feel like one of the things that I maybe not like, but I'm really interested in about the Lacusa version is that it really goes all the way with the darkness and the intensity of those themes. You know, that it doesn't, because I think in contrast, the Lipa version feels kind of sanitized and surface level in comparison, you know? But I also see how, you know, those themes are very difficult and need to be handled delicately, and need to be utilized. Need to be utilized, you know, when they're actually necessary to the story, and not just for shock value.
Yeah.
So are they biologically?
Yes. No, they're literally brothers.
Well, but there was also
I was hoping
a theory in our production. I think our director put this theory forward, if I'm remembering correctly, that they weren't actually biologically brothers, but they definitely were lovers, but they called themselves, they pretended that they were brothers and they pretended that they were a brother act to like avoid suspicion that they were gay or like be able to get more gigs and stuff. And I was like, that's interesting. That's like, that's an answer that is more grounded in, you know, the historical reality of it. Yeah.
Yeah,
but I like the absurdity of they're actually brothers and actually lovers. Like, I like that answer because it's
that is very
the poem
scary.
Is I just feel like it's the highest stakes and the creepiest and the weirdest. So it's interesting.
Yes. This the party is truly wild.
Truly.
Truly.
Sometimes if you're nice, Basil will sing with you. Like if I go, hey Basil, hey there you go. Oh, can't make a wife out of
cat.
Oh, she didn't meow. Sometimes she meows so that it's like, but she's too, she's sleepy. She just looked at me like, why can't we sleep? Thank you for coming to our wild Christmas party. The party was truly wild tonight,
truly
boys. I like ate shit in the walk-in fridge today because I stumbled over
something.
No,
you stumbled into the cheese sauce.
You stumbled
into the Paw Patrol.
I mean, it was into the almond milk
again.
That was the fucking almond milk. I think that's my favorite thing to say. Is put now on your phone.
I'm Mr. White Christmas. I'm Mr. Snow. Is that the lyric?
Yeah, no. I'm Mr. Icicle.
Yes.
I'm Mr. Jambalow.
Put one foot the in front of the other.
We can
we'll be walking out the door. A weekend. A weekend. A weekend. A weekend. A weekend.
I love that for
oh,
us.
Oh, no. What's the part, Meg? So Charlotte, we're going. Charlotte, we're going.
We're going. Charlotte, we're going. Good night.
Goodbye, viewers.
Love bye, you. Viewers. Bye, stumblers.
Listeners.
Good night to those of us. Good night.
Stumblers.
Good night, children.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you're looking to follow Emma or Henry on Instagram, you can find their Instagram handles down in the episode description. If you're looking for a way to support the podcast, you can follow us on Instagram at Stumbled Upon Podcast, or you could head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review and a rating. It would really mean a lot. Stumbled Upon Theater is produced and hosted by Meg Hamblin. That's me. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good day.